Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi. Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name's Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of the Evening Standard and Tom Hopkinson of the Sunday Mirror. The kids are more than all right. They're World Cup winners. Their talent is obvious. Unfortunately, so is their problem. Will they get the chance to play in the Premier League? That's the billion-pound question, isn't it, Tony?
Well, yeah, and it's, this will be the main The parts of the careers when they need to develop. They need to play against men. And if you're playing for a lot of Premier League clubs like Chelsea, you win the FA Youth Cup virtually every year, then you're not going to get in the team. I mean, luckily, there's a core of them from Everton. We should see some playing time, so they should develop. I'd expect the Liverpool players in the squad to see some action. But, you know, it's if you're in the Premier League top six and in the squads, you might struggle. You might have to move on.
You can understand it, I suppose, can't you? Managers now, it's such a short-term profession. But why take what they would see almost as an unnecessary risk in promoting a young player, go and buy someone off the shelf?
Yeah, of course you can. I mean, you only have to look at Chelsea and Roman Abramovich's hire and fire policy over the last few years. It's brought him great results in terms of title wins and cup competitions, and both domestically and in Europe. But if you know the risk involved with not winning a competition for a couple of years, why would you blood these young lads? Now, I think Antonio Conte, to be fair, has given a lot of chance to England under-21s players this year. Nathaniel Chalobah and Ruben Loftus-Cheek got a little bit of a look in as well. So there's the odd opportunity there. But interestingly, I was speaking to Stan Collymore earlier, who, for his Daily Mirror column tomorrow, I know has written about this, and he was talking about the fact that 25 years ago, I think it was, he dropped down from 2 years at Crystal Palace, went off to Southend, and how much he learnt from playing in Division One, as it was then, which is the Championship now. And he also referred to Kyle Walker, who, when he joined Tottenham, actually went off to play with Villa, QPR, Sheffield United, he went back on loan to, and it didn't hinder him at all. So rather than just playing for Premier League clubs on loan, bottom end of the Premier League, it probably wouldn't hurt these lads to go out and play for a good Championship club with good facilities, good training ground, and there are plenty of them now as well.
Was Harry Kane's development?
Absolutely, yeah. Went off to Millwall. So, just for these lads now on the back, to use this superb result, this real triumph for junior football and everything that's being done in clubs' academies and at St George's Park, for them to now build on it and maybe go and get 30 games rather than just a couple of games here and there in cup competitions could be vitally important.
What struck me very much watching them was the sense of adventure. And, we talked about the fear factor so much in junior football and senior football. They were winning in a World Cup final, entering added time, and they didn't do it once but twice. They had 50-yard attempts to lob a goalkeeper. Yeah. Now, the coaches would have been going mental about that because it's not the way you play, it's not how you manage a game. But you shouldn't really kill that, should you?
No, there was a sense of adventure about them I thought was great, because in the academies over the last five years, 8 years, the producer are like really neat footballers who play the ball sideways.
It's robotic,
they were playing
isn't it?
Safe.
Really robotic.
And these boys weren't playing safe. They were trying to win a football game.
It was a bit like watching Joss Butler go out to bat, wasn't it? And excitement that comes with that, when he's playing the shots that he's just completely, they're not out of the textbook. And it was lovely to see the young lads doing that. And also lovely to see in the semi-final the fact that they can go a goal down in such an important game, but they've got the mentality to come back and not just win it, but win it comfortably.
That's the thing as well. This whole, the England shirt weighs heavy on them. They didn't look like that. They looked like a bunch of kids enjoying themselves.
Yeah. Everton, you mentioned them. They provided, four or five of that squad. I was hugely impressed by Ademola Lookman. He looks a fair player and probably will get a lot of game time. What about Jonjo Kenny? If you're Koeman, would you play him at right back while Seamus Coleman is coming back?
Yeah, definitely would. You know, I think he's got loads of potential. You know, he comes from a family where, you know, sort of produced a lot of good players. You know, he knows where he's doing. And, you know, and what David done with the, you know, the Everton youth system is absolutely brilliant. I mean, they've been good. And you've got to give Martinez some credit there as well. I'm very reluctant to do that. But, you know, it's but during his term there, he put a lot of emphasis on it. So, yeah, I mean, and I think Everton have a real chance for these kids to thrive because they haven't quite got the resources that, you know, even look across the park to Liverpool. They'll get playing time. And, you know, I think you look at Tom Davis, the impact he had last season after they were trying to shift him out to loan in December. And, you know, and he has a huge impact. And I think they can feel good, even if Lukaku goes. They've got a bunch of kids coming through that have just great prospects.
If I can pick up on Luckman as well, Mike, I mean, we did a piece with him. He was put up to speak to the Sunday papers as we're previewing the final this weekend. And, you know, this is a lad who was still playing Sunday morning football with his mates in London at 16 years old. Now, it's yet another advert for what we were just talking about letting people get game time, letting them enjoy it, letting them go off and learn the trade. And, of course, it wasn't until slightly later that he was picked up by Charlton and then, of course, given his chance by Everton. And he's seized it because, again, it goes back to that not playing with any fear. And, you know, I would love to see lots of young lads take that, you know, not just when the big clubs come calling for, you know, when you're 12, 13, 14. I realise there are great opportunities there and, you know, the sort of the head, the lights and camera action of going to join a huge club must be very appealing. But, you know, if you can just keep yourself grounded and focused and get in playing week after week, day after day, that's where you're really going to improve.
Well, I mean, that's the thing that, in many ways, agents and families need to realise. Don't think about the quick hit, you know, the big club. Think about the development and the playing time. Because, you know, you might go to a big club, but if you don't play between 18 and 21, you're going to struggle. You've seen lots of players have dropped down a division. And when they're playing with men, they can't deal with it. Mm. You've got to, during those formative years, you've got to be playing against proper professionals. Mm. And that's where you learn the tricks, where you get your experience and you'll grow.
Anyone else particularly impress you? Tom, I looked at the captain, Lewis Cook. He made his breakthrough at Leeds, went to Bournemouth, 4 or 5 games for them this season. He's someone who could well kick on next year, especially under Eddie Howe.
He could, yeah, and I was just going to, that was the point I was going to make, actually. He's really in the right place. He's with a manager who will give youth a chance. And, you know, the fact that Jack Wilshere hasn't worked out for them, that gives him probably a little bit of licence in midfield to be blooded a little bit better again next year. But Eddie Howe might even look at it and say, well, we gave him a few opportunities this year, but I can't give him, you know, the game after game after game. So maybe he's an absolute prime example of somebody who should go out on loan. I thought Calvert-Lewin as well, very impressed with him. And Solanke, you know, we've heard a lot about him when you talk to people in and around Chelsea. There was the odd suggestion that his attitude hasn't always been right as he's been coming through the ranks. Sometimes I think Jose Mourinho felt that he probably thought he should be getting more of an opportunity than the job he was doing warranted. But I'm quite impressed by the fact that he has now said, you know, I'm going to go elsewhere. And it's not exactly too big a drop down, is it? Or a drop down at all to go to Liverpool, and he'll be very well remunerated going there. But I still think, you know, it again goes back to this idea that looking for doors to open and making doors open for them rather than just, you know, hoping that one day someone on the other side...
Because there was a hint that Solanke was pretty much ostracised at Chelsea in this last season. And it was very interesting that Gareth Southgate, when he was commenting on the under-20s, talked about their mental resilience. He'll need that at Liverpool, won't he? Because he's now in the big time and has to produce. Now, it's all very well saying costing £2 to £3 million, he's going to be a snip. He's got to go out and prove that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is, when Mourinho's first year, when he come over, he was keen to make a big thing about the kids. And he talked about Solanke, you know, again, Loftus-Cheek, and said, you know, these are, you know, in 3 years, these will be Premier League regulars. Well, that was never going to happen under him.
No.
But, you know...
He knew he wouldn't be there after 3 years.
Exactly, yeah. But, I mean, it is a great move, but he will be under pressure. And he'll probably be higher up the pecking order than perhaps he should be at his age, given the problems that, Liverpool have up front, you know, Sturridge never being fit. It means he'll probably play a lot of games this season. Mm. And, you know, he does need to hit the ground running because there's a lot of pressure and a lot of scrutiny that when he plays for Liverpool.
Is Liverpool an easy club to play for?
I don't think so. I think there's a huge expectation there for everyone, you know, sort of from top to bottom. And sometimes it's an over-expectation, an irrational one. Mm. And I don't think he's going to get a chance to feel his way into the part of Anfield. You know, he's going to be in at the deep end. And there will, of course, there'll be people, if he has three or four games, you know, a run where he doesn't play well, he doesn't score, they'll be saying, you know, this is indicative of Liverpool on a cheap transfer market, picking up people cheap when they should have gone for big names and all that sort of stuff. Mm. Madness, because Liverpool have made a real coup in getting them.
Right. One thing they haven't made a coup of is trying to get Virgil van Dijk. Fiasco, in one word. What's your view of that, Tom?
Well, first of all, let's not be naive and pretend that this doesn't go on in at least 95% of the transfers that are out there. I think that the problem was there was a story appeared in the Sunday People on the Sunday, of course, and it was saying that Manchester City looked like Virgil van Dijk was done. He was on his way there. 2 days later, you get every single daily newspaper drop with a story saying, no, it's a done deal to Liverpool. Mm. And, of course, alarm bells are ringing because from wherever it's come from, there has been a briefing there to say, this is the situation, we're confident of getting him and let's try and close down whatever Manchester City thinks. So that was the only mistake they made, which is unfortunate because, you know, wherever in the club it came from or whether it leaked out, unfortunately, to somebody close to the club who then passed it on, as journalists, we love that kind of thing. That is, you know, it's an absolute, it's gold dust for us, isn't it? It's a back page story and a good page inside. But the problem that Liverpool have got now is that, of course, Southampton have then got a totally legitimate way of going to the Premier League and complaining. I still don't think it's dead in the water in terms of that deal because I think Liverpool have put their hands up now. They've apologised for it. They've said they're not going to sign the player. But
it'll just cost them another 10 million quid.
Well, that's in the meantime, while Southampton are discussing with the Premier League. The Premier League say, look, do you want to take this further? And Southampton might say, well, actually, OK, we'll back down. Then you might get, in a couple of months' time, when everything's calmed down, Liverpool going back through the front door and trying to get it done. But it also, I could still see him going to either City or Chelsea now. Yeah. So I think City will throw much money at
it. It does beg the question, Tom, what is the point of this tapping up rule? If everyone
ignores
it.
There is no point to it. Any job, any company, and particularly in the Premier League, but Championship clubs as well, but any company in any sort of business, you wouldn't get rid of somebody in an ideal world without having a replacement to come in. You wouldn't, you know, you have to ask these questions and it goes on in every line of work. So I don't see why football thinks it should be any different.
But there's almost an unwritten code, though, isn't there? Where, you know, everyone knows it goes on, everyone does it, but you do things in a certain way. And certainly it looks as if it was briefed way too hard, too early, so that, you know, Southampton began to look embarrassed. You know, hang on, no one's spoken to us. Mm. And it's, you know, Liverpool's transfer policy over the last few years has been at times shambolic. And I think this is another example of it. And I'm no fan of Michael Edwards, the sporting director.
He's very stats-based, isn't he?
Very, very stats-based. And I just think it's an act of madness to... basically, someone's told the world that this is done before they've told Southampton. And it's just, it's rude.
Well, what I would say, though, is if I'm in charge at Southampton, whether you're Kruger or Reed or whoever's pulling the shots there, or even Lieber right at the very top, if you don't think that clubs are going to come for Virgil van Dijk this summer when it's been written time after time for months on end, and you haven't picked up the phone yourself and started asking players if they'd be interested, whether you've picked up the phone to an agent and asked him to contact another agent who in turn can contact the player, or got one of your players to say, oh, you know your mates from the 21s or your mate who you used to play with there, can you give him a quick call and just see, drop him a text, see if he's... If Southampton themselves haven't done that, then...
Oh, they're definitely doing it.
Of course.
But as I say, there is an unwritten code and Liverpool have overstepped the mark. And one of the problems with it here is that Fenway Sports Group, after they come in, have tried to create this idea that Liverpool are whiter than white. Liverpool do things differently. you know, it's we're not like the other clubs.
They don't make bids of 40 million and a pound, do they?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's, I mean, I'd ask a couple of other questions about Van Dijk as well. 60 million for a centre half. Well, he better be Beckenbauer. Or at least Alan Hansen, you know. It's
or just better than John Stones.
Well, yeah. It's but and you know, and the money they're paying him, and everyone's saying, you know, he's central to Klopp's plans going forwards. I'm just a little bit. It bothers me a little bit when a centre half central to your plans, building around a central centre half. Yeah, you need him, but surely you build around great midfield players or 30 goal a season strikers. You know, it might be me.
But he's fashionable, isn't he? He's very fashionable. He's the name that everyone's talking about. And to take your Southampton point, you know, they must dread picking up the papers now because you've got Ryan Bertrand.
I don't know, they seem to make a fair amount of money on every transfer.
But you look at Ryan Bertrand, right? Now, because Manchester City apparently are balking at paying £40 million for Benjamin Mendy, oh, we'll have him. He's straight off the shelf, England international. Southampton will sell him for 20, 25 million, whatever it is. Southampton are losing all their players. At what point do they lose their credibility as a football club?
I think it's still some way off. I mean, I think Southampton know where they are in the football pecking order. You know, this is a club who not so long ago were in the third tier of English football. And if you'd said to them back then, within 10, 15 years, you'll be a regular side in the Premier League, finishing seventh and eighth, season in, season out, and the big clubs will be coming, particularly one big club in particular, will be coming year after year to beat down a path for your players, and they'll be paying crazy sums of money for them. I think they'd take that. And I don't think if you sat down privately and spoke to anyone in a senior role at Southampton, they would pretend to be too outraged if Manchester City, Chelsea, Manchester United come and get their top talent. But I think Les Reed has proved with the team he's got in place over the years that he's aware of what sort of level Southampton are at, because that's why they put so much emphasis and effort into recruiting these really good young players and bringing them through.
And the other thing is, there's a thought process there. You know what? It's full backs and centre-halves. They should be the cheapest and easiest people to recruit. You know, it's you know, if you say to me, you know, go and find me a 30 goal a season striker, it's going to be yours. You're going to need an awful lot of money. It's impossible.
We're talking about that. You know, Manchester United are set to pay about £130 million for Belotti and Morata. I won't ask whether they're going to get value for money, because that doesn't exist anymore, does it? Because the sums are so absurd. But will they be good signings, do you think?
I mean, I thought United were very incoherent last year. They had the best season of everyone in the end. Two trophies, Champions League qualifications.
Three trophies. I'm joking.
That's, two and a leg cut.
I was just about to explode. Yeah, but they look very incoherent, and I don't see much pattern to the way the buying at the moment. I'm not so sure what's in Mourinho's mind, but no doubt they're going to spend and buy at least another three players at that sort of level. So, I honestly don't have a clear idea where United are going.
It was impossible to have a clear idea last year when they brought Ibrahimovic in as well, though, wasn't it? You know, who we just didn't know. We knew he was a quality player, but we didn't know how he'd adapt at his age to the Premier League. And he surprised so many people with not the way he went about everything, but just the sheer volume of goals he scored.
And he was great, but at least then when you looked at Ibrahimovic, you could say, well, the one thing he's going to do is going to slow them down, slow the attack down, because, you know, he's his movement's not great. You know, he's going to marginalise, you know, the likes of Rashford. So you kind of knew the way they were going to play into them. I don't have a clear vision of what United are going to do at this stage.
Do you think right decision to release Ibrahimovic, given the injury and the age?
There are two ways of looking at it, aren't there? I mean, he did come in and you know, do a great job last season, and he was great theatre, great publicity for the club, but a club that doesn't exactly need any more publicity, but he almost took that to another level. So from the one hand, you can look at it and say, well, you know, maybe they could have found a way to weigh him in while he goes through his rehab. But Also, I mean, they paid him in excess of what, £300,000 last year. So it's not like they didn't
a week, by the way.
It's not like they didn't give him, they didn't reward him well for what he did, and didn't pay him the sort of money that will cover his rehab time this year as well. So from a sort of moralistic or ethical point of view, you might say, yeah, they could have kept him on. But from the business sense of it, and look, Zlatan's, he doesn't need anyone to sugarcoat things for him, does he? He's a big man, and he'll be okay, I'm sure.
It is remarkable the Portuguese sides get a lot of money for their players. Now, United has signed Victor Lindelof, who's a player that everyone knows his name, but they don't know too much about him, you know, coming from Benfica. Do you think he's got the potential to slot in into that defence?
Well, he's got to be better than what Mourinho's got. You know, it's the Smalling and Jones. You know, he doesn't really fancy them, and I don't blame him. You know, Bally, who looks as if he could be a player, you know, needs work on his game. I saw someone was saying to me, one of the papers, we're talking about him as being a sort of more like Rio Ferdinand. I think United will be very, very lucky if they've got anywhere near that good. But he's likely to be better than John Stones. I mean, he's a big boy, he's strong, and he's quite good with the ball at his feet. He's got the look of a defender that Mourinho likes.
City are in the market for defenders and attackers and midfield players. They're in the market for anyone. Pep seems to be getting a bit hands-on with it now. He's the one personally courting Mbappe. Do you think he's got a chance of getting... He will cost a ludicrous amount of money. We're talking 120, 130 million.
Well, he will, but if anyone's got a chance of getting him, it's Pep Guardiola then, isn't it? I mean, the two richest clubs, you would think, when it comes down to things like this, are either City or Paris Saint-Germain, with the limitless troughs or bottomless troughs. Yes, he's got a chance. I wonder, though, with the players he's got in, whether Mbappe would look at that and say, you know, A, I can stay at Monaco and guaranteed to start week in, week out, guaranteed Champions League football.
World
Cup year. I can go to Real Madrid, but am I going to have the same problem there as I would have at Manchester City? I could move to Arsenal, of course, not got the Champions League, but I've got the Premier League. And I still think that Arsenal would actually be a good move for him, for a lad of 18 years old to go and have two or three years with Arsene Wenger, somebody who understands the culture he's come from, speaks his language, can help bring him on, as he did with Anelka. And then, you know, Anelka went off to Real Madrid and he was a much better product and better article.
Anelka was a long time ago. In the last 10 years, young players have not improved under Wenger. I'd see that as a big red flag.
I don't know. I just think it'd be a good move for him. I think Wenger's got so much to prove this year that necessarily hasn't had in recent years. I know the Arsenal fans might argue with that and say, look, we've been on his back, the pressure's been on him, but I think this year he's going to be in so much focus that he needs to go out and get a big striker like that.
Still staying with City, if we could. Is it a true measure of how much money buys influence that Juventus, who, let's be fair, 10 days ago were in the Champions League final, they look like they could well lose Sandro and Bonucci to City or Chelsea, that almost the great club of Italy is a feeder club to the Premier League.
Yeah, but I mean, they do it on their terms. So Juventus is one of those clubs where, like Milan, is if you do a deal and get a player off them, after you've shaken hands, check your fingers, because you never know what you're going to get. They have a knack of selling at the right time. And certainly, some of Bonucci's defending in the second half in the Champions League, you know, you'd think, oh, they'll ship him off to City. He'll fit in there. he's a good defender. But
was against Ronaldo as well, who he's not going to be.
To be honest. But yeah, there is. I mean, almost all the clubs in the Premier League now can financially bully even teams like Juventus. So it's no surprise really that, you know, the likes of City come in. But I mean, I think if I think what Guardiola needs to do is spend money on a sort of an injection of pragmatism. Really, you know, can they operate in, you know, sort of You know, it's like a heart replacement, a pragmatic replacement.
Actual,
you know,
heart replacement.
Yeah, because they're actually, you know, until he addresses the problems in the centre of midfield and the centre of defence, City are still going to have a haphazard season. No matter, you know, even if they get Mbappe and they have a multitude of brilliant attacking players, because you can't win by making the team so lopsided.
You mentioned Pep being hands-on. I mean, I think he's got to be as well, because I think like Wenger this year, and I know Pep's not got a decade of limited success behind him, but he's got so much to prove at Manchester City, and you know, they spent big last summer. He had six, whatever people say, oh, he only came in, had 6 months to prepare that squad. And with the resources that Manchester City have got, the training facilities they can offer to players coming in, there was nothing to stop him getting the players in that he wanted last year. So he's going again this year, going big as well with the money they're spending, with the numbers that they're bringing in. So yeah, I can imagine that's the reason he's hands-on. I can imagine
he has a free pass last year. He won't get one this year. Mm.
What about Joe Hart? You know, you mentioned him in passing there. You know, he's saying, I haven't got a club that's interested in me. Mm. I find that difficult to believe, to be perfectly honest. Where do you think he'll end up?
He'll be back in the Premier League. I wonder if a club like an Everton might take him, West Ham. I mean, Joe Hart would do a great job for any club in the Premier League, to my mind. He's still got it. You might look at maybe the top four now and say he's got the odd free kick ricking in, players have worked him out.
Well, you were at Hampden, so you saw that.
Yeah, I was. And I was thinking more about the Gareth Bale free kick two summers ago. Well, where are we now? Yes, last summer. And, you know, we were watching that game in London, and I was with somebody from a football club, and they said if this was put down low to, which I can't remember which side it was it his left-hand side, then he's going to be in trouble. And sure enough, Gareth Bale had obviously worked that out. I actually thought with Lee Griffith's free kicks on Saturday, I wondered if people were being a little bit harsh on Joe. It certainly didn't make me jump around saying he needs to be dropped, and there's no wonder Pep Guardiola got rid of him because of that. But I think they were just two great free kicks. But I still think he's a cracking keeper, and I still think he brings a hell of a lot to every Premier League side that would court him.
If you were looking for a goalkeeper in the Premier League, though, would you go to Hart or Jordan Pickford?
Pickford.
I'd go for Pickford anything.
It'll cost you a lot more than Everton's £8 million bid, which was completely derisory,
well,
wasn't it?
Yeah, it's classic Everton now, isn't it? You know, it's they put in a bid that's way too low and then wonder why they don't get people. I mean, Pickford's a good young keeper, and he's got the best potential of any of them I've seen. And you probably have to pay him significantly less wages-wise than Joe Hart, but the fee would be significant.
Mm. I'd probably take Butland over Pickford as well. So whether that would open a gap at Stoke for Joe Hart, you know, and of course living in Manchester wouldn't be a million miles for him to travel, would it, from Cheshire? I'd guess he will be based down to Stoke. So there will be options for him. I mean, you know, look, we're still in this season, aren't we? So I think Joe Hart can take himself away on holiday after the France game, and when he comes back, he might just find his agent spoken to the right people.
Mm. You mentioned Everton's sort of flimsy grasp of, you know, reality in terms of financial terms. Lukaku, £100 million player?
Well, I wouldn't pay £100 million for him.
It'd be good business if they got £100 for him and Pickford for £8
million. Yeah,
wouldn't it? You know, but he scored a lot of goals, and he seems to... Chelsea seem extremely keen on him. And obviously, with the... the problem between Costa and Conte, now it looks as if it's likely to happen. I think if they get anywhere near 100 million, if they get to 80, I think Everton will bite their hands off.
Mm. And what about the way that came in? We talked about tapping up earlier on. He turns up, International Week, does a press conference for the local press. Hey, presto, I know where I'm going. You know, the lack of respect for his current employers was amazing.
Yeah, the one thing I would say about Romelu Lukaku, though, is I would imagine he is the type of person, you know, having spoken to him a few times in mixed zones, so I'm not professing to know him, but you get a little bit of an idea of someone's character. And I think that he is the type of person who would have sat down with the club before the end of the season and told them exactly what he said. I don't think he's the type who would go about it in a snide sort of way. I know, particularly when he was at Chelsea, I remember doing an interview with him for the first time. We were out in Southeast Asia on one of the pre-season tours, and we, you know, stood with him for quite a while, really eloquent, very well spoken, very clear about where he wanted to go with his career. So I think you would see him handle everything properly as far as Everton are concerned. And I think if Ronald Koeman or anyone on the board were to come out at Everton and you know, act all surprised and shocked by what they'd heard, then I don't think they'd be telling the truth.
You mentioned Costa, Tony. 58 goals in 120 games, which is some strike rate. It does seem all over there now. What do you think he gave Chelsea and what will they miss about him?
Well, you have the menace, malice, craftiness that not many other players in the Premier League had. During the autumn and early winter, he was winning games almost single-handed, games that he would have drawn, which might have taken a bit of momentum out of them. I think he's a fantastic player, and they will probably miss him. Whether they'll regret it, given the awkwardness of his character and the trouble he caused, is another thing altogether. I think Conte just reached the end of his tether with him, and basically sacking him by text message is one of the classic moments in modern day football.
It's quite a feat, making people feel a little bit sorry for Diego Costa, isn't it? But I agree with you, Tony. I mean, I've whatever you think of him, I've loved watching him over the last 3 years in the Premier League. There's been theatre, but he's also the leadership that he's brought to Chelsea as well. Like you say, those games that they won 1-0, I think there were three of them
on that
run of 13 games. There are certainly a couple in there where he single-handedly dragged them through it, 1-0 wins. And I think they're going to miss him greatly. And I don't think that Lukaku is a ready-made replacement for him yet. I think he might be in 2 or 3 years, but certainly for now, I think they're dropping down in the standard and the level of centre forward if that is indeed the replacement who's brought him.
Mm. You get a flavour of a player being perfectly suited to a football club. What about Mahrez? I think he's perfectly suited to Arsenal in their current guise.
Lightweight, disappears when the going gets tough. Yeah, it works for me. No, he's a great player. On form, you know, he'll cause havoc. He'd give Arsenal the bit of width that they've got from the fullbacks, and they'll probably lose if Bellerin goes. I think he's direct. And I mean, Sanchez would certainly have to, if he stays, would have to play inside, and that'd be a good thing. I think he'd probably be more effective than Ozil for Arsenal. So I think it's quite a good match.
I wouldn't go near him if I was Arsene Wenger. I think you need characters this year in that size, and I would be appalled by what he did for Leicester City this year. I thought...
Or what he didn't do, more to the point.
Absolutely. You know, a year ago, we got to the end of the season, he was getting accolades as Player of the Year. He was unbelievable in that fairy tale season. This year, just completely down tools. Now, for him to come out at the end of the season and say, we had an agreement at the end of last year that I could go somewhere, that agreement is put in place. It's a you give me one more season like you've just given me and we'll let you go with our blessing. He just didn't do that at all. And if I'm Arsene Wenger, I'm looking at that thinking, well, I had Alexis Sanchez disappear on me for 6, 7, 8 weeks during the season when the going got tough. Do I want to bring in another player with that sort of flaky character? Now, I know people have done it before. Eden Hazard did it a year ago, didn't he, with Chelsea and then came good again. But I would be, if I was Arsene Wenger, I would be looking at that very, very cautiously.
Do we give credence? You know, you mentioned Bellerin. It's floated around for a couple of years. Barcelona's interested in him. It seems stronger than ever now. You know, the word is stronger. Have they got a fight to keep him?
I think so. I think there's been a change in his mood. I mean, I spoke to him before Christmas and he was very... If he wants to be in Barcelona, it'd be in Barcelona. Arsenal's where he want to be. But he was... I think he's been a little bit unhappy with the way things have gone at the Emirates and has spoken up a little bit more. He's developing into a little bit of a voice in the dressing room. And the problem is, if you challenge Wenger, generally you haven't got long.
Yeah, he's a bright guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very bright. Very bright and very determined. But, you know, so if you speak up against Wenger, then you find yourself, perhaps not first choice.
He had that episode with the fans as well, didn't he, which you wonder if it might just have changed his mind when he was getting the blame for, he was almost single-handedly getting the blame purely because he was the one closest to where the supporters were for all of Arsenal's ills at times this season. But, you know, he's turned down Manchester City a couple of times. I think they've made a discreet inquiry and he's said no. So, you know, I would expect him to be at Arsenal again next season and maybe give it one more year. And I think particularly now we know that Wenger's staying for a couple of years, I don't think there needs to be any rush for him to move on. I think he could have one more year and just see if there is a reaction, see if these players that Arsene Wenger has promised to try to sign, at least if he can bring them in, and they maybe can win something a little bit higher up the football pecking order than the FA Cup.
If you look around the Premier League, you've got clubs throwing sackfuls of money at a problem. Tottenham, you always sense, are run a bit differently. You know, they've been linked with the Dortmund defender, German international, Matthias Ginter. Is that the sort of signing that you would expect them to make this summer? Class, bit of pedigree, but not top dollar.
I would have hoped they'd have gone for that top dollar signing, because I think they've already got, in every position, class and pedigree at the moment. I just think they haven't got maybe that one stellar striker or maybe one other huge name to come in the centre of midfield. Now, getting into that centre of midfield, the way Dembele and Wanyama and Dele Alli have been playing would be very difficult. But, I would have hoped for a little bit more for Tottenham, particularly going into what we all know is such a big season for them. They've shown improvement, steps of improvement over the last 3 years, and they, if they keep improving, they're going to win the league. And that's why they need that sort of player. It's almost, I know it's been referred to before as sort of that Cantona signing, you know, that one that brings this whole young team together and makes this young team have that focal point in the dressing room, and he's not going to do that.
I know what you mean, Tom, but I mean, you know, there aren't many Cantonas out there. He was a one-off, and how much was he costing today's markets? I mean, I quite like what they're doing. I mean, I think what they need is three or four players to strengthen the squad, you know, because they're going to be obviously in the Champions League and they're hoping for a better campaign than last year's one, which was a little bit disastrous. I think if they buy judiciously, get good quality players, they do need a second striker.
They still do need to do that, don't get me wrong. You know, they still need an extra couple of players to bring in. Not too many, you know, to upset the harmony of the squad or the balance of the squad. And we think they'll lose Kyle Walker anyway. Yeah. So, you know, they are going to need a couple of players. But I just mean that one sort of linchpin player to come in and really...
They could do it leadership, couldn't they? Probably leadership.
Talking of that, it was one of the great sort of games, the parlour games that you have, is looking at a player and saying, will this player be a manager in the future? Now, I always thought for a while that Darren Fletcher could be a manager in the making. He's moved to Stoke on a free. Is he of that quality? And do you think that, you know, we are looking at a manager of the future there?
Oh, yeah, very bright player, very, very bright fella. You know, knows the game, knows what he's talking about. Very clever on the pitch. You know, used space really well. You know, he actually made more of his abilities than you'd expect. He turns himself into a better player than he probably should have been. So I think, yeah, that, and Stoke was a perfect place for him to develop. You know, I could see him going into coaching as soon as his career's finished, and he'd be very good.
Anyone else? Obviously, Steven Gerrard's being groomed at Liverpool. What about Frank Lampard at Chelsea?
Yeah, you sort of, you know, again, when we spend a bit of time talking with these fellas and in the company of these fellas, you do often get a little bit of a feel for it. But sometimes, you know, you can be really quite surprised by the lads who are sort of in the background. I mean, if you think about Paul Simpson and the success he's had with the under-20s this summer, you know, you wouldn't have thought about him coming through the ranks. Now, you know, think of Lee Johnson at Bristol City as well and the way he's developed. So it's not always the superstar players who go on to be the absolute top-quality managers.
And Frank and Stephen, they thought too much about themselves and their own game. You know, you do fear for it. You know, they needed that midfield building around them to get the best out of them, and that always bodes badly for me as a, you know, as a coach and a manager.
What I like about the way Gerrard has gone in though with Liverpool, and I do like the way he was speaking while he was out in Los Angeles, was it Bruce Arena he was speaking to a lot while he was out there, and at Liverpool he's gone in, he's not tried to go in as Ryan Giggs did with Manchester United and want to take the first team straight away. So he is going to go in and clearly has a desire to learn his trade and learn all about you know, and feed off Jurgen Klopp and pick his brain. And I still think, and this isn't to say that Frank Lampard wouldn't become or couldn't possibly become a good manager, because he is a very bright fella, very good company, knows the game inside out, and could, I'm sure, go on to have a very distinguished career. But I also look at Frank and think, I wonder if he needs the pressure of management, because he would be absolutely brilliant sitting in front of TV cameras chatting about the game week in, week out, and make a fortune that way. So whether he needs it or not, that's the big question.
It does help in management having a benefactor. Now, if you've got a benefactor and his name is Roman Abramovich, hey presto, you get a job. Leonid Slutsky has turned up at Hull, of all places. How do you think that'll go?
Well, given Hull's precarious situation and the mess in the boardroom, I think it's probably going to go badly. I mean, Slutsky did quite well at CSKA, and you know, it was took them to the Champions League, took them to knockout praise. But his Russia side in the European Champions last year, if Hodgson wouldn't have been there with England, he could have gone for the worst manager in the tournament. It looks a strange appointment to me, and it looks, I wouldn't be feeling overly confident if I was a Hull fan.
Right. And what about a Middlesbrough fan? You know, if you're going to get someone to come in to get you back straight up, Gary Monk fits that bill, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely right. I think they've, again, you look at the craziness that's going on behind the scenes at Hull over the last couple of years. Look at Middlesbrough, and it's just a sea of tranquility, isn't it, with Steve Gibson. Now, I know they had problems between Ita Karanka and the dressing room in his latter days in the job, or maybe the last sort of year he was in the role, because there was the
strange walkout.
There was a walkout, wasn't it, just before they got promotion. But yeah, I think Gary Monk is a very good fit for them. I don't think he'll be in there making crazy demands, but I think he'll be in there making the sensible but very firm demands that he will see required to get Middlesbrough back to the Premier League.
Yeah, I think they need to spend better.
Yeah.
And they need to make use of the wages better. You know, but I can see Monk doing really well there.
He's did very well at Leeds. I mean, you shouldn't underestimate the job he did.
Were you quite surprised that he didn't stay there?
No. No, I think there were a couple of things going on with it, weren't there? From my understanding is that he was offered a 3-year contract, but there was a break clause after 12 months and then again after 24 months. So, in effect, it was a rolling 1-year contract, which, you know, you're a young manager, you're clearly sought after. Why would you sign a deal like that? It was a bit of a shame that he didn't stay there, because I think had they offered him the contract that he wanted, or even a couple of years, then I think they could have helped each other grow, because there's no doubt that he calmed down what was quite a volatile situation.
Yeah, he was pretty keen to stay, so... Mm. It's just the offer was all wrong.
Because someone's going to get hold of that club, and they are going to go back up.
Yeah, the person who gets Leeds right, they'll make millions, but they'll actually do really well in the football sense.
Yeah. What about Craig Shakespeare? You know, it's now been confirmed, 3-year deal. Do you think he'll see that 3 years out?
I think it's a tough gig. It depends on the expectations in Leicester, and it depends how well they do in the scouting and recruitment area. I suspect that there'll be demands which are unrealistic placed against them, and it wouldn't surprise me. They're going to lose some of the players. You know, Mahrez will undoubtedly be out of there. There's questions over Vardy plus his age. So they're going to be into a big rebuilding phase. Has he got the ability and acumen to do it? Well, the jury's out on that, but I have a nagging suspicion that he hasn't.
It just worries me that they didn't give him the job the day after the season ended.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been a huge statement that this is the man we believe in. But instead there was this, we're in talks.
Did that suggest to you they were going after someone
elsewhere?
Else?
Of course, yeah. What else were they? What else would have taken? You can't tell me Craig Shakespeare was in there demanding, all sorts of pay structures that were beyond what Leicester City felt he was worth, and it was just a case of agreeing the personal terms. They were clearly having a look for a bigger name manager, which would have, of course, appealed far greater to the Asian market, as other certain clubs in the Midlands have shown that they like to do. I think it's a decent appointment, just maybe for if you had another year there and just you know, calms everything down after that incredible roller coaster that they've been on in the last couple of years. But I don't see him seeing out that that 3-year deal at all. I hope he does. I just don't see it.
Can we sort of almost start, let's finish where we started with the whole idea of transfer fees, opportunity for young players. The current system, you know, it's the economics of the madhouse. What does that tell you? Does it tell you that this is a football is a business out of control?
Oh, yeah, completely and utterly. You know, it's to think the team that finishes bottom of the Premier League gets 92 million, you know, it's without even kicking a ball.
Well, Real Madrid got 80 million for winning the Champions League, and Sunderland got 93.5 or something.
Yeah. We heard about Arsene Wenger the other week. It's not, you know, it's not the end of the world these days to not be in the Champions League. And that is the madness of the Premier League.
Mm. But you do hear talk of the top six wanting a bigger slice of the cake. That sums up the natural selfishness of professional sport.
Of course, yeah.
Where are we going with all this? Are there any limits? When are we going to get the £1 million a week player? When are we going to get the first £200 million player?
I think probably around the time of the Qatar World Cup, it will be the first million a week player. That'll be not the next television deal, the deal after that. Probably first million a week player. It could come in the next television deal, but I think that'd be stretching it. But it's not far away. It's only round the corner.
And I don't think there is any end to it, Mike. I mean, while ever TV revenues are going up, there's going to be no plateauing wages and transfer fees.
And the thing is, we're still thinking in terms of traditional media. So we're thinking the Sky, we're thinking the BT, we're thinking of watching through your television. There's still the likes of Facebook and Google who are hovering in the background. Whether they will actually come in for the make a bid as anyone's guess, but certainly the international rights will outstrip the domestic rights next time round, and the cycle gets madder.
It's depressing, I know, but the rich are simply going to get richer. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.